snow are pressed together under tremendous weight. This pressure forces tiny ice crystals together, joining them into bigger and bigger crystals. The water molecules lock together into a regular pattern, like a mosaic of tiles. Impurities are pushed out to the parameters of these interlocking crystals, leaving the ice inside as pure as distilled water. In contrast, the crystals of an ordinary ice cube lie together in loose, disorganized strings, never locking into a single overall pattern. These large crystalline structures also make glacial ice more beautiful than regular ice. Light refracts through these large, regular crystals, much as it does through a dazzling gemstone. Finally, while there may be tiny bubbles of air trapped in glacier ice, this air will be under high pressure due to the weight of the glacier. As the ice melts, these bubbles pop and crackle, adding an audio dimension to your glacial cocktail. This moment of science comes from Indiana University. Today's program was prepared by Eric Sonstrom with help from Bob Blakely in Geological Sciences. I'm Yael Cassander.
In sports, Brett Favre has been officially reinstated, but it remains to be seen whether he will stay with the Green Bay Packers or be able to compete for the starting quarterback position. Packers coach Mike McCarthy said yesterday he wants to talk to Favre before he makes any decision on opening the quarterback job up to competition. Ryan Dempster will be on the mound for the Chicago Cubs tonight when they open a three-game set against the Houston Astros at Wrigley Field. Dempster is 12-4 this season. The Cards have today off before opening a three-game series against the Los Angeles Dodgers at Busch Stadium. The Cards are currently in third place in the NL Central, six games behind the division-leading Chicago Cubs and one game behind Milwaukee. After months in the top spot, the Chicago White Sox have fallen one half game behind the Minnesota Twins in the AL Central. The Sox are off today, but they'll try to regain lost ground tomorrow when they open a three-game series against Detroit. The Tigers are seven games out of first place in the Central. And funeral arrangements are pending for Atlanta broadcaster Skip Carey, who died in his sleep yesterday. Carey was the son of Hall of Fame broadcaster Harry Carey, who was the longtime voice of the Chicago Cubs. Skip Carey was a St. Louis native who joined the St. Louis Hawks NBA broadcasting team and followed them to Atlanta in 1968. He was added to the Braves broadcast team in 1976. That's sports.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Prevena Medical Group, where doctors treat people, not illness. More information available at 1-866-PREVENA. The physicians of Prevena Medical Group encourage you to join them in supporting WILL.
It's 2:43 Central Time. Heat advisories are in effect for all of Illinois south of Interstate 80. In the WILL severe weather coverage area, we have these advisories in effect. Heat advisory in effect in Ford, Iroquois, and Livingston counties until 8 p.m. tonight, and in McLean County until 9 p.m. tonight. And for Champaign, Christian, Clark, Coles, Cumberland, DeWitt, Douglas, Edgar, Logan, Macon, Moultrie, Piatt, Sangamon, Shelby, and Vermilion counties until 7 p.m. tomorrow. Currently 89 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. The dew point is 80. Coming up this afternoon on The World, a Chinese-American journalist in Beijing was looking for local flavor. So she enrolled in a local cooking school and became a chef. She found out that one way to understand the Chinese is through their stomachs. Her stir-fried journey through China. That story in the day's news coming up on The World this afternoon at 3. China's state media reported today a border patrol station had been attacked. It happened in China's far west, where separatists are demanding an independent state. The news comes as China justifies heavy security at the Olympics by saying it faces a terrorist threat. Here's NPR's Anthony Kuhn.
According to the report from Xinhua News Agency, the attackers used a dump truck to ram their way into a paramilitary police border patrol station near Kashgar. Kashgar is an oasis town on the Old Silk Road. It's in Xinjiang province, which borders on Central Asia. Xinhua said the attackers lobbed two hand grenades, killing 16 paramilitary policemen and injuring 16 others. The report called the assailants rioters, but it didn't identify them. China's military is deploying some 34,000 troops to Beijing and other Olympic host cities to prevent just this sort of attack. In charge of the troops is Senior Colonel Tian Yixiang, who briefed reporters on Friday.
I believe that during the Olympic Games time, terrorist organizations both in and outside China will attempt to sabotage and interfere with the proceeding of the Games. As far as the Beijing Olympic Games is concerned, the biggest terrorist threat comes from the East Turkestan terrorist organization.
The U.S. has listed the East Turkestan Islamic Movement as a terrorist group. But Western governments are concerned that Beijing is using the terrorist threat to suppress discontent among Muslim minorities in China's border region. Anthony Kuhn, NPR News, Beijing.
Among Iraq's problems, add talking on a cell phone. Cell phone networks arrived after the 2003 invasion. That was good. The problem is many of the systems were incompatible. Last summer, the Iraqi government approved a multi-billion-dollar cell phone deal with two Kuwaiti firms and one Iraqi firm. But rather than improving the phone reception, it's gotten worse. NPR's Soraya Sahardi-Nelson reports from Baghdad.
It's not just flies and searing heat that are grating on Iraqi nerves this summer. This message in Arabic is also annoying some 9 million Iraqis who use cell phones in their country.
Sorry, you cannot make this call now. Please, try again later.
The automated cell phone message, repeated in English, shows what Iraqi callers have to go through these days just to get through. Usually, they have to redial the number two or three times to make a call. When they do finally reach the person they are calling, the conversation often sounds like this.
Hello. Hello. Tisma'ni? Hello, tisma'ni?
After several frustrated hellos in Arabic, the caller tells his friend he'll text message him instead. That's if he's lucky and able to get a signal at all. And it's not as if he can turn to a landline as a backup. War and sanctions have pretty much killed any landline service. Who is to blame for the shoddy service depends on who you ask. But what everyone agrees on is that cell phone service has deteriorated since the Iraqi government sold the right to operate wireless phone services last August. That $3.5 billion deal, selling 15-year licenses to two Kuwaiti companies and another Iraq-based one, was heralded as a major milestone toward reconstructing Iraq's infrastructure. The distinction was short-lived, especially for Zain. The Kuwaiti firm is now Iraq's biggest cell phone company. Zain worker Farid Ahmad, who is 29, says the company inherited a slew of headaches when it took over several million subscribers from an Egyptian company that lost the bid. Those headaches included shoddy or missing equipment and a shortage of qualified engineers. Plus, the deteriorating security at the time kept repair crews from adequately maintaining cell phone towers. Ahmad says at least one engineer was kidnapped and killed, while another one was shot. He added that sectarian violence defined where the crews could work. For example, Sunni engineers could only go to Sunni neighborhoods, while Shiite engineers could only go to Shiite neighborhoods. Zain company officials refused to comment on tape about the problems, but some say privately that the Iraqi government is to blame. They claim it refused to give Zain the frequencies that had been used by the Egyptian company. They say as a result, Zain had to add millions of new subscribers to its existing network, which it simply couldn't handle. Darin Akram, spokeswoman for the Communication and Media Commission in Iraq, which is the regulatory body for cell phone service here, says Zain officials have asked for time to try and work out the kinks.
They are obliged to improve themselves and their cadres and their crews. We've given them time, but the time is running. And at the end, there will be, legal steps to be taken against them.
She adds the commission will give them to the end of this year. That doesn't sit well with Zain subscriber Hussam Abbas Aydin. The 21-year-old college student says there is no excuse for the government to make out with a lucrative contract while Iraqis are left with shoddy cell phone service. But given that Iraqis are already living without decent electricity or basic services, he's not hopeful that the government can do anything to improve cell phone service anytime soon. Soraya Sarhadi-Nelson, NPR News, Baghdad.
10 minutes before 3 o'clock. In small towns across the country, many people have decided that a cheaper way to get around is to leave the car in the garage and pile into the golf cart. Golf carts and other small, slow-speed vehicles are becoming more appealing to people living in areas where traffic is low but gas prices are high. In Illinois, several small towns are allowing golf carts on their streets, while others are holding back. AM 580's Jim Meadows reports.
Golf carts travel slowly both by law and by design. That's just as well, as I take a spin around the Piatt County town of Cerro Gordo with Tim Allen on his gasoline-powered cart. On a basic model like this one, there's very little between the rider and the road. No doors, no roof, and no seat belts.
This one doesn't have a top on it, so it does give it a lot more of an open feel. You get a top on it, you can put a windshield on it. It gives you a little bit more of a car feel, more of a enclosed ride.
Tim Allen and his wife Shay run LG Custom Carts, repairing and customizing golf carts out of their Cerro Gordo garage. And they lobbied for the town's new golf cart ordinance, which took effect just last month. Local governments in Illinois have had the authority for the past decade to allow golf carts and other so-called neighborhood vehicles on their streets. But they have to have basic features like lights and turn signals and stay on local streets with low speed limits. This year, the concept has zoomed in popularity. Drew Hole, the city administrator for Tuscola in Douglas County, says the reason why is obvious.
You know, the few people that have expressed a desire, I think it's entirely about fuel savings.
It's no surprise that golf carts are just cheaper to run than cars. One cart maker, Club Car, claims their gasoline-powered models get 26 to 31 miles per gallon, about a nickel a mile at local gas prices. For electric models, the cost goes down even more to 1 or 2 cents a mile. But in Tuscola, the city council said no last month to golf carts on the street, at least for now. Mayor Dan Kleiss says there are too many questions about the practice, especially with a state law that leaves it up to local governments to decide which streets are safe for golf carts.
Let's say that we say Street X is okay to travel on and something happens on Street X. Do we then become liable because we said it was okay to travel on that road as opposed to any other moving vehicle? We do not do that. We do not regulate what road is safe and not safe to travel on, per se.
And the number of Americans getting hurt in golf carts is going up. Researcher Lara McKenzie of Nationwide Children's Hospital in Columbus, Ohio, says she was surprised when the study she co-authored found the number of golf carted-related injuries in the U.S. rose 132% in 17 years. McKenzie says about 70% of the accidents occurred off the road at sports or recreational facilities, say golf courses.
And injuries that occurred on the street, however, more often resulted in concussions and were more likely to require hospitalization than injuries that occurred in other locations.
Tim Allen defends the golf carts and compares them to another type of low-speed vehicle commonly allowed on the street.
As far as liability from a municipality's aspect, your liability on a golf cart being on the street should be no more than a bicycle. If somebody gets hurt on a golf cart or falls out of a golf cart, it's no different than them falling off of a bike.
As the safety discussion continues, the state law that lets local governments regulate golf carts and other neighborhood vehicles could be expanded. State Representative Chapin Rose of Mahomet says he's working on legislation that would add all-terrain vehicles and off-road motorcycles to the list of vehicles that municipalities could make street legal. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
In addition to Cerro Gordo, Illinois towns that allow golf carts or other neighborhood vehicles on their streets include Greenup in Cumberland County, Ashcombe, Crescent City, and Danforth in Iroquois County, and Cesar in Franklin County. Coming up Wednesday on the Afternoon Magazine, that's the 6th of August, we'll talk about traffic. Our guest will be Tom Vanderbilt. He writes about design, technology, science, and culture for Wired, Slate, The New York Times, and other publications. He's also the author of the book Traffic, Why We Drive the Way We Do and what it says about us. That's Wednesday following the 1 o'clock news. Coming up tomorrow in the 1 o'clock hour of the program, our guest will be Wendy Johnson. She's a founder of the Organic Farm and Garden Program at Green Gulch Farm, and she is the author of Gardening at the Dragon's Gate, At Work in the Wild and Cultivated World. We'll talk with her tomorrow about gardening and environmental education, and she'll join us following the 1 o'clock news tomorrow. She'll join us at 1:06 Central Time.
And sky.
Today, Tony from the Vientiane International School in Laos asks the scientists about how long we or our descendants might live.
Is it possible for human to live for 200 years?
Earth Sky spoke to an MIT professor of biology who studies the genetic sequence that controls aging. Lenny Garenti says he's skeptical about humans living as long as 200 years, but he said new research could help extend our lifespan.
In mammals, which includes us, what we think is the case is that calorie restriction, a low-calorie diet, triggers anti-aging genes that are called sirtuins, and that enables us to forestall diseases of aging so we can stay healthier longer and perhaps to actually live longer.
Garenti doesn't believe that science could stop aging altogether.
There's just too many things that go wrong in aging, that it would be almost impossible to fix them all at the same time so that you achieve immortality. What I think you can do is you can achieve something that's better than what we have now.
He said life expectancy could increase anywhere from 10 to 30 years in the not-too-distant future. Our thanks today to the Monsanto Fund, bridging the gap between the needs of people around the world and their resources. I'm Joel Block for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
WILL programming.